Welcome to the Smarticle Podcast, where we take a good article and make it gooder.
Here's the headline. The accidental war correspondent. Tim Mak wants the world to see a different side of the war in Ukraine, even if he has to go it alone. This comes from Slate magazine. I'm assuming Slate is on the MAGA of the Woke MAGA meter.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I saw the name Amon Ismail, and I was like, huh, I wonder if he's Jewish or Muslim. And sure enough, he's Muslim. And he says, I'm a Muslim with lots of questions. And I thought that was kind of cool that you're starting to see, you know, it used to be like Ted Johnson, you know, a white dude, you know, writing for whatever. But you're starting to see much more of a larger representation of people and writers. So I thought this was an interesting interview, not only because of the person writing it, but also the topic, the person being interviewed. So we'll get into that in the show, obviously.
Let's start with a couple clips here. Tim Mak, a former investigative correspondent for NPR, was among the 10% of the organization's staff who were laid off in March following budget shortfalls. He's been covering the war in Ukraine. After the decision came down at NPR, Mak decided he wasn't done. He will return to Ukraine as an independent journalist with his newsletter, The Counteroffensive, which, by the way, I think that's an awesome name. He plans a more intimate kind of reporting with investigative stories that focus on the kind of human experiences. Reporting on a war is a painful process. There have been times I thought, this is a quote from him in the story, reporting on the war is a painful process. There have been times I thought leaving that I would never go back. It's a tough assignment. It's a very stressful one. You go around the country talking to people and many of them are having their very worst days of their lives. And you have a little cup and people pour some of their sadness into it, some of their grief, some of their anger into it. And what kind of empathetic human wouldn't slowly begin to be affected by it? Let's just put this in a little bit of a box. He's a young guy who gets to make this big life decision with
no kids
on his own, blah, blah, blah. But still, amazing that he gets fired by NPR and then says, you know what, I'm just going to live in Ukraine and be a war correspondent. By the way, he's got to raise money to do it. It's not like he's got automatic money raining down on him.
Right. It's kind of interesting, too, because his name, when you said it, I was like, oh, if you couldn't see him, he's Asian. I think he's probably of maybe either Vietnamese or I'm not sure what Mak. It's M-A-K. So yep. I'm assuming it's an Asian name, which is it's neither here nor there that, you know, obviously he's an American citizen, whatever. But my point was he doesn't represent sort of the stereotypical journalist anymore. He's a younger guy. And there was something really, really cool about what he's trying to do. He's trying to, I mean, to be a war correspondent is tough, man. I mean, you're in a war zone. You could be killed. They get killed all the time.
Yes.
And so there was something about him being there and trying to represent these stories. He talked about how he got there and how they went into Kyiv the first day. And, you know, at the beginning, I think he has a couple points in here that I really want to address. One is sort of when they first got there and why they got there. And then two is sort of people losing sort of interest in the war itself. But he talks about the fact they went to Kyiv. They were just going there. In the very beginning, I forgot about this, that there was a, you know, it's like all over the news that Russia is going to take Ukraine in like 3 days. Well, here we are almost a year later, and it's not even close. It's a stalemate, basically. You know, some sides say that the Ukrainians are winning. Some sides say the Russians are winning.
Stalemate.
But it's not good for anybody, right?
No.
I mean, ultimately, it's a brutal, bloody war. And Ukraine is definitely doing much better. And with help from the allies and, you know, from the NATO and Western countries for sure. But it's just interesting to me that he is deeply embedded in this problem. He's not Ukrainian. He has no, you know, vested interest in it. He's just there. And what you said was he went there as a correspondent for NPR and they had to flee the city because they thought it was going to be invaded. So they were just driving around Ukraine in this car. But he felt so strongly about it that even when he got fired, he went back. And like you said, he had to raise all his own money to do it.
Well, here's the thing. If you're an NPR correspondent, I'm assuming he could get another job with another organization. So it's not like he got fired. It's like, what am I going to do now? He probably could have got
a job. He didn't get fired either, by the way. He got laid off.
Well, laid off. My point being that he could have gotten another job.
Sure.
And the other part that I'd like to say is that he was so impacted by what he was doing. You know, a lot of times in life, we talk about this all the time. You don't leave any liminal space. You just do, and then you're done. This guy was letting this job impact him and the people that it was affecting So much so that he was like, I cannot leave these people. I just thought that's beautiful.
Yeah, like it was very real. He's personally invested in
yes.
this now. And it's no longer a situation where he's like, oh, I'm just going there as a journalist and, oh, it's dangerous, I'm going to go home. He is fully committed to this process. I don't know what that says about him as a person. I wish this guy had interviewed him, asked him, what made you even want to be a war correspondent? What made you want to be a journalist in the first place?
Well, there's a gazillion war correspondents out there. Not a gazillion, but lots, like Richard Engel from NBC. Like, he goes from war to war to war.
Right.
Like, what would, like, he's a 55-year-old man and he's been covering wars for 30 years. Like, there's got to be a little bit of an adrenaline junkie in him. Like, you don't just keep going from war to war to war as a normal human being.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's no question that it takes a certain type of person to put yourself into. There's no reason he needs to be there.
No.
I mean, you could say if he was making tons of money and highly paid and it was, that might be one thing, but there's really the only reason he's doing this is because he really believes in the process, or maybe he, like you said, he loves the adrenaline. I don't know, but he's basically writing about and cataloging war crimes. And he said the one thing that was crazy is more than 70 or 80,000 war crimes have been committed in the last year in Ukraine. That's crazy. Which means that people have been, you know, shot without reason, you know, all the crazy stuff that happens.
Come on, that's easy, dude. You hear about all these Russian mercenaries coming in and raping the women. And by the way, then Russia taking all of the Ukrainian children and indoctrinating them in Crimea. It's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I don't think that the average American who was paying attention before had a lot of hope.
We're not paying attention now.
No, we're not. But what I'm saying is, what's really interesting is that because of the polarization of our own country, what would have been unthinkable back in the 80s during Reagan, now people are like, yeah, you know, Putin's not a bad guy. I'm like, yes, he is. He's a terror. It's not that we're perfect and we don't do bad things, but this dude is a absolute megalomaniac and he is killing his own people. Not, I mean, you know, like if you disagree with him, you get thrown out of a hotel window. I mean, like, he's the classic demagogue, right? He's the classic dictator who just does. And again, does anybody think that things will end well for Putin? Of course not. You're going to read about him being holed up in some mountain retreat, being killed by his own people eventually, because he's just, you can't get away with this forever. It's just interesting that, you know, and that kind of leads us into the segue into the second part is, why do you think it is that Americans are not paying attention anymore?
Dude, why do people live in the suburbs? We just want to remove the unpleasantness. My father-in-law always like, oh, these homeless people in San Francisco in your city. Yeah, because you live in the suburbs where it's illegal to be homeless and sit on the sidewalk. And they send them to me. Removing unpleasantness, bro.
Yeah, he says, in this thing, that the guy asked him, do you think people have stopped paying attention? There's a tendency when a story goes on for a certain amount of time to turn away from it. It was such a shock when the war broke out. Because, by the way, this is a major war in continental Europe. It hasn't happened since World War II. This is a big deal. Not that wars in Africa or wars in Asia aren't a big deal, but this is one that could be a global catastrophe. This could be the kind of war that it turns out to be World War III. This is bad. So it's such a big deal. But you're right. People don't want to pay attention to these kind of things. They want us to.
I don't
want
to pay attention to it.
Yeah. And there's only so much that human beings can take in terms of war and slaughter and death and all that. I mean, think about Syria has been at war for 20 years now.
That one is, you know, horrible. By the way, I don't want to pay attention to that either.
It's hard. So what do we do? And maybe that's the answer. Why being a war correspondent is so important. Why what Tim Mack is doing is so important. Because let's say he writes a article for his Substack and it goes viral. You know, one article, who knows what it's about.
Just one
thing. And a lot of people pick it up and read it. It gets picked up by all sorts of different magazines or media outlets. That could make a huge difference in the world. So what he's doing is important.
So that was my one thought I had about reading this story. Is there anything in your life when you were a 30-year-old and didn't have a lot of responsibilities that you wished that you had the passion to stop and had the time and the wherewithal to make the world a better place? I was like, man, I should have done something. Joined the Peace Corps. Gone to teach English.
Yeah, I don't want to brag, Larry, but I actually did do that. God. I was in AmeriCorps. But no, I mean, I think no. I don't know if I've ever had that kind of... I mean, I was a teacher for 25 years, but I'm not sure that was because I wanted to make the world a better place. I think I fell into it and I liked it. and served a purpose for me. But I, to answer your question, is I don't think I've ever felt passionate about anything until I started doing this to make the world a better place. So I'm answering.
You're a passion.
You can't make fun of me for answering the question you just asked.
I feel like
dickwad.
Thank you for admitting you were passionless. that's a great. I had this friend who, like 15 years ago, ran this wiffle ball tournament. He had three young kids. He always did this wiffle ball tournament, and it took all day. He set up these nets and hosted these people, but the Craigs.
He doesn't do it anymore.
He doesn't do it anymore. But I remember thinking, like, why are you doing this? You got three young kids. He's like, I got passion for wiffle ball, man. I want people to play wiffle ball, and that's what makes the world go around. This guy and his passion for the people of Ukraine is inspiring, and I'm so thankful that we have people in this world that want to make the world a better place.
Wait, I could just hear the comments now. So you're contrasting and conflating a dude that did a wiffle ball tournament in Golden Gate Park and drank beer all day long with this dude that's going into war-torn Ukraine? Is that what you're saying because they're both passionate?
By the way, that came on the heels of you admitting that you were a passionless person.
I didn't say I wasn't passionate. I didn't say I was passionless.
You never had any passion.
I just said that I wish that I would have had something. You asked if I had something to change the world, by the way. That's not what you asked. I had plenty of passions, let me tell you, buddy. You know, the mean streets of the marina were not safe for me and my passions. But
hello.
I think that you have once again, you're trying to move the dial, Larry, and I'm not gonna be hooked by your bait, Larry. I'm not going to be hooked by your bait.
Brandon, I would like to thank you for your walking through life without passion. Appreciate that, confessing that to all of us. And I would certainly like to thank Matt. Mac, this is an unbelievable story. I'm super thankful that we talked about it today.